Are you recording now?
I'm recording. This is gonna sound weird.
Things are about to get weird. Just get to the murder.
And welcome back.
Welcome back.
And I say welcome back because we being me, Sydney.
And me, Taylor.
Took a bit of a hiatus. Taylor had a lot of schoolwork. If you're new to the pod, she is studying to be a lawyer. So, and, you know, I may need some legal help in the future. So anytime she's like, hey, I got to really hunker down, I'm like, go ahead. Anything for me to not have to pay for legal help in the future.
Yeah.
And also, I just think it's cool in movies when people are like, you'll be hearing from my lawyer. I'd have a lawyer. It would just be Taylor.
Yeah, got a little hairy there for a little bit. I was in a real hard class this semester. It was I had to, you know, put on a real fake trial, which just, I tell you, it gave me a run for my money. But that's over now. And now we're in finals. And, you know, a lot of people get stressed about finals. I am not one of those people. I'm just like, can we just get them over with? So, we're back. I ain't seen y'all in a month of Sundays. And, you know, that really is a good segue into the fact that this is a podcast called This Is Gonna Sound Weird. And our theme this week is Appalachian stories. Crime, something like that, you know. And in Appalachia, we like our sayings and phrases and such.
Yes, you do. I can't say that we do because I am not from that area of North Carolina. Taylor is, if you could not tell via her accent. However, I do love the Appalachian area. Actually, since we last recorded, I went to the mountains to a little town called Cranberry, North Carolina, which is kind of outside of Boone. And there's nothing to do there except for drink, which is what we did. We just drank in a cabin. It was really close to the Tennessee line, though. So if you want to, like, go see Tennessee, it's the part of Tennessee where there's nothing to do. And ironically enough, the county right over the North Carolina border is a dry county.
If you go to Tennessee,
just outside of Cranberry, don't think you're going to get a beer with your dinner because it's a dry county.
I also have been to the mountains since we last talked. I went home, which technically I live in like the foothills, so whatever. But I drove up to Cullowhee. And if you don't know where Cullowhee is, it is where Western North Carolina University is, because my best friend Lydia lives there. Lydia, if you're listening, hey, you probably are not listening, but she got a brand new baby, so I went to meet their baby.
Wow. Where'd she get it?
I don't really know. I heard she just found her somewhere. No, she grew it in her
belly.
That's
crazy.
She grew it in her belly for 9 months. She was pregnant at my wedding.
That's true.
So if y'all follow me on Instagram, you've probably seen a picture of her. But anyways, yeah, I went up there while we were there. I mean, I didn't drink no alcohol in Cullowhee. I assume they have it. But I did eat Chili's because they live right next to a Chili's.
God, that sounds delicious. Love a good gourmet meal at your local Chili's. Yeah. Their chips and salsa is just chef's kiss. And their cookie skillet is so good.
Don't talk about cookies. I got cookies waiting that I'm going to make after this. They're like cocoa, peppermint. I'm a real big chocolate and peppermint gal. So I'm excited to see what the cookies are going to taste like because I'm hungry.
I am also a big chocolate peppermint gal. I have had the peppermint milkshake from Chick-fil-A this year. It's delicious.
I haven't had that this year, surprisingly.
I love mint chocolate chip ice cream. It's my favorite flavor, and I know that that is the flavor that most grandmothers love, but, you know, dress for the job you want.
I love it. Now, this is a switch, but I'm going to ask you this while we're on the air, because it may be something that the listeners might want to hear about. Did you finish watching Wednesday?
I did. Okay. I binge watched the TV show Wednesday on Netflix. If you haven't watched it, please do. I finished it yesterday. Finished it in like a day and a half. Just blazed right through it.
Me too. I started it. Well, we started it on the same day and finished it on the same day. But you finished it before me because we use the same Netflix account. But when I went in there, I was like, dang, Sydney must have watched it. So I finished it last night. And I'm not trying to give no spoilers in case I accidentally do. I don't mean to, but it was so good. It made me cry at the end. It was just, I don't know, I was sad. They'd be hugging. Maybe I was tired. It was like midnight when I finished it.
It's possible. I did not cry, but I also thought it was very good. And I saw this video where Jenna Ortega, the actress, talks about how the fact that she doesn't blink when she plays the character. Mm-hmm. And I spent the entire show trying to find a point where she blinked, and I couldn't find it. And then I would be like sitting there trying not to blink to see how she would do it. And I don't know how she did it. She must have very wet eyes.
Yeah, I saw something today where she was like, I just tried to learn how to blink, like, during other people's lines or whatever. And I was like, But, yeah, the show was very good. And I, as Cindy knows and not many people know, maybe y'all don't know, I don't really like scripted TV shows. I have a very hard time finding ones that I like. And I really liked this one. I don't know what it was. I just really liked it. I liked the whole witch aspect of it. You know, the old timiness. I was shocked by who the monster was. I was kind of upset, actually.
Is that why you cried?
Well, okay, so here's the thing. This is a spoiler, but when she was kissing the person who the monster was, you know, I was like, oh my gosh, yes, this is it. This is stuff that fanfic is written about. And then all of a sudden, it happened. And I was like, well, I'm done. I'm upset.
Yep. I was not surprised. I don't know why. I called it very early on. Maybe I just listened to too much true crime and I've just figured out the hints. But I still thought it was good nonetheless. I thought it was funny. In like a kind of like dry deadpan humor. And I just love the Addams Family. If you're into Broadway musicals, there is an Addams Family musical that was on Broadway starring Nathan Lane. It's very good. A big fan of that. But yeah, I just thought it was cute. It was just a cute little show.
It was.
And it was an easy watch. I mean, yeah. I just blazed through it.
I did too. And I'm not typically one who would blaze through something that quickly like that. I'm not quite a binge watcher. So yeah, I mean, we blazed through it. We both started the same day, ended the same day. And it just kept me on my toes. And I'm pretty sure
that that show beat like Stranger Things for like most watched in a week or something.
Yeah, so,
way to go.
And at the end, you know, it gave a little cliffhanger about how it probably will be coming back. I don't know how they'll be able to top it, but also it was directed or whatever, created, I don't know, by Tim Burton. So obviously I liked it. And if you like Tim Burton, I mean, come on now.
If you're a spooky person, you probably loved it.
Yes. So anyways, I just thought I'd bring it up on here. You know, we hadn't been here for a while, so I knew that the people wanted some of our amazing commentary on the shows we've been watching.
Mm-hmm. If there's one thing that the people have come here for, it's to hear us talk. Mm-hmm. Whether it be about, you know, the topic at hand or something we bring up off the cuff.
Yes.
But let's get to the topic at hand.
Okay.
Appalachian. And that is how you pronounce it. It's not Appalachian. It's Appalachian.
Yeah.
And I like to go ahead and say that in case you think that it needs to be pronounced another way. We've got a native Appalachianer
sure.
here, and she will tell you what, I don't know if that's correct. She will testify that is how you say it.
Yeah, I'll call my mama right now. She's probably been asleep for 5 hours, but I'll call her.
Yep, she's probably going to be like, "Well, who is everything all right?
Who are you? Who are you?"
But, all right. So, for this week, I am covering the Brown Mountain Lights. You ever heard of it?
I feel like maybe.
All right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and tell you it. And you know what? Since I did the research for this particular story so long ago, I'm going to be rediscovering this topic along with you, the listeners.
Mine will be the same. I like reread over it today, but to be fair, I wrote it weeks ago. So to let the people know, we didn't just slack. Like, I've had this ready for weeks. It's just the timing has just been, it's been a no-go.
Yeah. Who has the time? Not me.
Not I.
But if you want to do extra research on this topic, the sources that I used was Blue Ridge Mountain Travel Guide, RomanticAsheville.com, and CarolinaCountry.com.
Wow.
So, I did not seek out the Romantic Asheville website, it just sort of came to me.
Asheville's so romantic.
It is. The hippies.
Yes. You know, my dad used to not want to go downtown Asheville because he was scared of the hippies.
You know what? I get it.
But that was way back. That was like in the early 2000s. And hippies, we were just still, you know, we weren't sure what they were at that point yet. They were transitioning between what they were in the 70s to current.
Just that whole, you know, 20-year span between the 80s and the early 2000s was a scary time.
I'm trying to figure out what they were.
But then they started having breweries and everything got a little bit better.
Now we're like, let's go.
All right. Well, if you decide to go and you're not afraid of hippies, then you might consider visiting Brown Mountain, North Carolina. And there you may witness what people refer to as the Brown Mountain Lights. For over 100 years, people have claimed to see lights flickering and moving across the night sky. The lights have been reported as being white, red, yellow, orange, and blue, and hovering approximately 15 feet off the ground. Their size has been described as that of a large ball of fire, but also as small as a candle. So, could be big, could be small.
Okay.
And the first recorded sighting of the Brown Mountain Lights happened in 1771 when German engineer John William Gerald de Brom, quite the name, wrote about seeing the lights in his journal. He reported seeing the lights at the same time every night, which then led people to believe that it wasn't necessarily a phenomenon so much as he was seeing a train and its lights in the distance.
Oh, yeah.
But it's important to note that throughout the 20th century in the Linville area, or Linville, there were several reports of light sightings, and this was at the same time when the area first gained access to electricity.
Mm.
So, you know, if you're used to just, you know, candle or oil lit, and you start seeing lights in the distance, you might think, oh my gosh, something's happening. But it could have just been a light bulb.
Light bulbs are terrifying.
They are scary. I've heard that if you drop an LED one on the ground, it lets out poisonous gas. You have to leave the room. I don't know if that's true.
You know, I've heard some about that before.
Something like that.
You remember back in the day, I don't know if people still use them, but I feel like in my house we used to use, I don't know if the LEDs are those curlicue ones. I always heard that the curlicue ones let out a poisonous gas. You know what I'm talking about?
I don't think those are the LED ones. I think those are the regular ones.
Or are you talking? In my house now, we just use regular round ones. You know, when I was little, we used the curly Q ones. It was almost like a coil. I'm talking about
like an Edison bulb.
No, they like It wasn't like when you think of a light bulb, if you're a kid and you draw a light bulb, you know. It wasn't
You're thinking of one that's more like a tube almost. Like the bulb itself. Kinda,
yeah.
Yes, yeah. I have heard that.
Yeah.
Because we had the long skinny ones in our garage growing up. And my dad sometimes would drop them and we'd have to leave the garage for a bit.
Yeah. Now we use like, Brandon likes, oh wait, there's one in here right now in my light beside me.
Oh God.
God. But it came with it. I didn't put it in. Anyways.
All right. I think it'll be fine. I'll think it'll be fine. I've been sitting next to it for months.
I've had this lamp since freshman year of college.
She's being held up by her own lamp. It's got a gun. Now, reports of the lights are especially common after a rainfall. While no one really knows what the lights are or what causes them to appear, local legends do try to explain them. And one of the explanations is that in the 1200s, a brutal battle between the Cherokee and the Catawba tribes took place at Brown Mountain and left many dead. And according to legend, the lights are from the tribal women's torches as their spirits search for their men who died in battle.
Mm.
So almost like they actually probably went and looked for their deceased at the time of the battle. But then, like, since obviously they died, it's like their ghosts are mourning it and they just keep going out looking for them.
Yeah.
Now, another legend regarding the lights tells the story of Belinda, a woman whose disappearance concerned neighbors when Jim, who was Belinda's husband, had been having an affair. And soon after Belinda's disappearance, lights began to appear on the mountain, and then wind followed, led to a pile of rocks, under which the bones of a woman and a child, believed to be Belinda and her daughter, were found. There were bloodstains found in Jim's cabin, making townspeople conclude that Jim was responsible for his wife's and daughter's disappearance. Now, another legend is that a young man who was courting a young girl would each night have to cross through a dark patch of forest to get between his house and hers. So, in order to see the way, he would carry a lit torch, but on the eve of his wedding, he did not arrive at the girl's home. So she sat there with a torch, waiting for her groom to come, but he never would. So, it is believed that the Brown Mountain lights are the young girl waiting for her groom to come home. Or perhaps, you know, her searching through the woods to find him. There are also many stories of people carrying torches looking for their loved ones, similar to what, you know, we just heard. Okay. Aside from local legends, scientists have tried to explain the occurrence of the mountain lights. In 1771, a German scientist explained the lights as inflamed nitrous vapors, while in 1913, a U.S. Geological Survey concluded that they were headlights from a locomotive, you know, like we mentioned earlier. Yep. However, the tracks washed away in 1916, and yet people still claim to continue to see the lights to this day. Of course, many people believe the lights could be UFOs. Mm-hmm. And in 1921, U.S. Weather Bureau study suggested that the lights were a phenomenon similar to the Andes lights, which are silent electrical discharges between mountaintops and clouds. The lights have been investigated over three times by the United States government, which is pretty interesting, because that kind of reminds me of, in our Bigfoot episode, a way throwback, how there is a file at the FBI on Bigfoot.
There is. So I'm like,
obviously the government are intrigued enough about this that they, you know, went and studied it. But the fact that they came and studied it three times, which means that they don't know what it is. Could it be ghost? Could it be nitrous gas? Could it be UFOs? I don't know.
Yep. Aliens. You know, the government. I was watching a TikTok the other day where this girl, like, talks to an ex, not FBI, like, what is it? CIA, something like that. And she asked her just, like, vague questions, and she was like, if the general public knew, like, everything that you knew, would they be more scared or, like, less scared? And she was like, they'd definitely be more scared and have, like, a lot more questions, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, whoa.
Oh, what? God. How Please could I be more know. Scared than I already am?
Ma'am, I have terrible anxiety. How can it get worse?
No, I already asked way too many questions. Just ask my boyfriend.
God, I swear. I'm not really a question asker, but Brandon's a question asker. Dear God. He'll ask me the dumbest questions. Sorry. The marriage is great.
Yeah, I ask a lot of questions, but I've always been a question asker since I was little, and I often like to ask them right before bed. So, you know, when you're laying in bed and you're about to fall asleep, I'll be like, how big is the earth?
You know, yeah, like, that's some shit Brandon will do. Like, the other day he asked some question, and I was like, did you, like, hear that on a TikTok? He's like, no. And I'm just not a question asker gal like that, I don't guess. So maybe you and Brandon should get in a room together and just fire off questions. Yeah. With no answers.
Me and him, we're just going to have a question off. Yeah, I ask a lot of questions, but, you know, it works out because my boyfriend likes to answer them. Sometimes he gives me a little bit more of a long-winded answer than I would like. And I'm like, I just need, because I have an attention span of a gnat. So I'm like, whoa.
Look, at least he likes to answer you. Meanwhile, I'm like, why? Can you quit asking me questions? Why would I know the answer to that? I think it's because when I was younger, I would be like, no offense to my grandma, you know, but we would be like driving home from school, and she would just ask me questions where I guess, you know, she's just trying to talk to me. She'd be like, I wonder who lives in that house now. And I'd be like, I have no idea. I'm 6. I have no idea who lives in that house. It should be like, do you think it was Susan? She's like, I don't know. I think that's where it stems from.
thank you for sharing your trauma. Appreciate that.
And you know, that's less trauma. It's more just an agitation that I developed. It just happens that I married a man who also likes to drudge up that agitation.
You know what? You just need to do what Colton does, which is fall asleep. So if I ask him a question, it's a little too close to bed. Sometimes he just up and falls asleep. So maybe you should just work on that.
I should start trying that. I've already started a reputation though of being the one who's up till like 3 o'clock in the morning. So there's no way I can pretend to be asleep before I am.
Hmm. Well, all right. Come up with a different idea and we'll come back to it.
Okay.
Another explanation as to why these lights appear is that there is a high level of quartz in the area, and it is believed that applying pressure to quartz crystals in granite develops a high voltage, resulting in a light. The light has also been explained as foxfire, which is an eerie phosphorescent light related to fungus on decaying wood, which I think is kind of like bioluminescence. You know, like how algae, sometimes if you hit it, algae will like release something that looks like a light. It has also been explained as could be a St. Elmo's fire, which has nothing to do with Elmo. It actually is electrical discharges from sharp objects under a thunderstorm. So paranormal investigator Joshua Warren has been visiting Brown Mountain since his family took him camping there as a kid. Well, one of these camping trips, he claims he saw a ball of light climbing through the trees and ascending into the sky. And in 1982, a Morganton resident, Tommy Hunter, said he actually touched... Yeah. Morganton. He actually touched the lights at the Highway 181 overlook. He had looked over the edge and saw a ball of light that was hovering, and he touched it. He said he felt as if he had stuck his finger in a light socket. Six other people were with Tommy that night, and they all corroborated his story. But still, doesn't quite explain, you know, what, you know, this could be.
Yeah. Like, okay, so obviously the northern lights are a thing. Do they think it could be something similar to whatever happens with the northern lights? I don't know what the northern lights are, but...
I mean, I guess, but I don't know, like, I don't know if it's, like, been where the northern lights, you know, you can go and see them at certain times of the year.
Yeah.
I don't know if they've been able to determine that with these lights, you know? So I think that's why,
I see.
You know, they still can't quite determine it.
More random. Yeah.
Because, like, yeah. You know, that one guy said he saw it every single day, but then other people are like, you know, it happens a lot when it rains, or, mm-hmm. you know, that. So that tells me that it doesn't happen all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
So, present day lore says that seeing the lights while wooing your sweetheart will bring luck to the love. The Burke County Chamber of Commerce in Morganton, North Carolina has published the following. It's a classic courting custom of the Blue Ridge Country to drive your loved one or, you know, your little honey out to see your little sweetheart out to see the brown mountain lights and to persuade your suitor to take you out to see them if you're a woman in love. If you see the lights, the legend implies you'll be lucky in love. If not, your courtship will come to nothing.
Well, Brandon never took me, and I never persuaded him to take me, so what does that mean?
Well, I think you'll be alright. As long as you keep answering his questions.
We did get engaged in the mountains, so the lights could have been going on while we were getting engaged in Asheville. I don't know.
Well, I couldn't say. I think you're in too deep to be concerned with it.
Okay.
Yeah, you can't get your deposit back on a wedding you've already had.
Damn. You sure?
I'm pretty sure.
Damn.
But the lights were featured in an episode of The X-Files, which I thought was pretty cool. And bluegrass musician Scotty Wiseman wrote a song titled Legend of the Brown Mountain Lights. And a National Geographic article has called the Brown Mountain one of the three best places to experience a natural wonder, being the Brown Mountain Lights.
I need to go to Brown Mountain.
I know.
Where is it actually located?
It's a little bit outside of Asheville. Obviously, it's got to be close to Morganton. So it's probably closer to where you're from.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm very close to Morganton. Interesting.
Yeah. So maybe next time you go home.
Yeah, maybe Brandon, maybe don't go home for Christmas.
Yeah, maybe don't take Brandon if you're worried something might happen.
That our marriage will fail.
Your marriage will fail. Yep, it is... just before you get to Mount Airy, North Carolina.
Interesting.
So it's almost to Virginia. Not really.
Okay.
I don't know why
I don't know if it's near Asheville. Yeah. Because Mount Airy is like in a weird place. Like when I drive home, like I go by Mount Airy, but it's like... It feels like it's middle of the state, but it's probably just more north than I would think. But she says it's no near Linville Gorge. Yeah, on a dark Linville Gorge. Now, I've been to Linville Caverns. You ever been to Linville Caverns?
I have not. It's been on my list, but I thought about going there this past time.
I've been to Linville Caverns a lot. Yeah, you go in, you know, it's this typical cave experience. You go in, you walk around. It is really cool. I've been a lot. They turn the lights off, as I've heard they do in most all caves, to show you how dark it was when people were in the cave with no lights. And then there's this really, like, skinny part that they will take you in to show you, like, how deep the water goes beneath you. But, like, when I think about it now, I'm like, it's like, I don't even know if I could fit in it. I remember we went like on a school trip one time and we were like, you know, young children, but some of our teachers were too big to be able to fit into this small space that they basically shove you in a line and then they go, look down. And they're like, this water goes miles deep below your feet. And I'm like, well, now I'm claustrophobic and I want to get out of here right now.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I'm not typically claustrophobic, but in a situation like that I do become a bit claustrophobic, especially if it's like you're in a cave, there's one way in and one way out. If the entrance of this cave like collapses, we are screwed, you know.
Yeah, which going in the actual cave, I never felt claustrophobic, but when they shove you into that small little spot where you're literally standing on top of, like, a grate, it is. But they have a gift shop, and I still remember my love of crystals began in the Linville Caverns gift shop because it has one of those, you know, little spots where you can shove a bunch of rocks into a bag and pay however much for how much your bag weighs. And I got a bunch of rocks. And I went home that night and showed them all to my family and explained. And I remember my favorite one was some sort of, like, bloodstone. And I was like, you see? There's, like, little red specks in it. And that's the blood. And my family was like, please. What the fuck? Yep. You were supposed to just be going on a school trip. But yeah, Limbo Caverns is pretty cool. I haven't been in a while, but I've been a few times.
Yeah, I also had a love. I think we all started with our love of crystals at any sort of museum when they had just that pit of different rocks and gems.
Yeah.
And then you could, all you had to do was get one of those little pouches and fill it up. Yes.
And I always love, like, the geodes, like the broken open geodes. And I always would get one of those because when I was younger, my dad would take us hiking a lot. And we would end up going somewhere that had a gift shop. And they always had those broken open geodes. And I would always get the purple ones because they were my favorite. So, it's no wonder that I have become what I've become.
Absolutely. It was a long time coming.
Yes. But thank you for that story. I need to learn more about those brown mountain lights now. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, would we like to hear my story?
I guess. You know, we've been waiting on it for a couple weeks, so... Yeah. Why not?
Now,
while we're here.
Mine is a bit different. I went the true crime route.
Wow.
So.
A little bit different, because I feel like I normally go true crimey and you go more...
You do.
Paranormally.
I know. We switched it up. So, these are my sources, and I think these are the only sources that I used, but now that we're so far out, I can't remember. But these are the ones that I have tagged. So, we have a Charlotte Observer article, and it was by Haley Fowler, and then a article from the Winston-Salem Journal, and it was by Monte Mitchell. So, on February 3rd, 1972, it began snowing around 3 p.m. in Boone, North Carolina. The Durham family lived in Boone, and they had been living there for about 18 months on this day. So, Bryce Durham was the father of the family, and he was a Wilkes County native, and he had moved to Mount Airy for work in the car loan business, and then he eventually moved to Boone to open up his own car dealership and this was something that the family was very excited about. So, the family was also made up of Virginia Durham, who was the mother, Bobby Durham, who was the son, and Jenny Sue Hall, who was the daughter, and she was married. She lived about 4 miles away from the Durhams, the main family. She lived in Boone, but she lived with her husband, Troy Hall, about 4 miles away from her mom, dad, and brother. So, on February 3rd, Bryce, the father, was attending a Rotary meeting at Appalachian Ski Mountain in Blowing Rock, and only a few of the members had actually showed up to that meeting because by that time, the snow was getting really bad and the winds were like up to 40 miles an hour. And so when the meeting was over, one of the other members actually drove behind Bryce on the way to his dealership. So he was following Bryce back to the dealership that he owned. And the guy who was following Bryce thought that Bryce probably arrived at the dealership around 8:30. And Virginia, the wife, was working late at the dealership that night. So she was already there. And it's believed that they told Bobby, the son, he was a student at App at this time, to meet them there. Because the plan, I think, was that they were all going to ride home together in a car from the dealership because the weather was getting really bad. And Bryce had a new four-wheel drive car at the dealership, so that was what he was going to use to drive the family home in these bad weather conditions, which I totally get, because if it snows at home, my dad goes to the car lot, because my dad also, well, I guess my grandpa owns a car lot, but my family owns a car lot, so when it snows, we go to the car lot and get the nicest four-wheel drive car they got on the lot, and that's what you're going to drive during a snowstorm, so I get it. I've been there. I would say that you may have been there, but I don't guess it snows at the beach.
It does not snow at the beach. My dad, you know, also worked in the car dealership industry, but yeah, I think it snowed a whopping 2 times in like the 18 years I lived at the beach.
Yeah. So once they all got to the dealership, they got in that four-wheel drive car and they drove home. And their house was on a dead-end road that had a very steep hill, so that's probably why they all wanted to ride together in one car, because they were trying to be careful, and, you know, they wanted to make sure they were all going to make it. So, some neighbors report that they saw a vehicle go up that hill that night, and one neighbor said they saw it around 9 p.m. So, when the Durhams got home, it's likely that they were, you know, they got home, they were eating a snack in their living room, and then they were met with a terrible surprise. I don't know why I used the word surprise. I wrote this weeks ago, but we're going to get back to
it. Was not a surprise party.
No, but we're going to switch gears anyways, and I'm going to leave you hanging on that part, because as I mentioned earlier, the family also had a daughter. Her name was Jenny Sue Hall. She was married to a man named Troy Hall, and they were also both Appalachian students, and they lived in a mobile home about 4 miles from the rest of the family. And if you know anything about Boone, their house used to sit in the area where the Boone Walmart is currently located. So if you know where the Boone Walmart is, that's where their house was.
Okay.
And now, at around 5 p.m. on this day, Troy told Jenny he was going to go study at the library. And while he was there, he saw a friend and stepped outside to take a break. And the two had a conversation. And then Troy ended up going back home around 10 o'clock p.m. So when he got home, he and Jenny watched that year's Winter Olympics on the TV for about 10 or 15 minutes. But they had to stop watching because the TV went out, which was probably because there was a full-on, you know, snowstorm going on outside. So they ended up putting a record on their record player, and at about that time is when they got a call. Troy answered the phone, and when he answered the phone, you know, Jenny, his wife, was listening, and she heard him say, "Virginia, is that you?" When he got off the phone, he told Jenny, his wife, that it was her mother on the phone, and he said that there were 3 men, she said they were black men, in her home beating Bryce and Bobby, and then the call abruptly cut off. Troy tried calling back, but the line was busy. So, Troy and Jenny ran out to their car so that they could go to her parents' home, but their car would not start. So, they went to a neighbor. I know. So they went to a neighbor named Cecil Small and asked him to drive them. Now, this is an odd fact. It doesn't really come into play. But Cecil was actually a private investigator. So that is just like, what? So when they got to the Durham house, so Jenny's parents' house, Jenny waited in the car while Cecil and Troy walked up the hill to the home. When they got into the home, the lights were on and the house had been fully ransacked and the phone had been ripped off the wall and blood was spattered in the den and the TV was still on. Now, Troy and Cecil also heard running water when they got into the house, so they went to find where the running water sound was coming from. They found the sound coming from the bathroom, and in the bathroom, they found the bodies of Virginia, Bobby, and Bryce, and they were all dead. So Troy and Cecil immediately ran to a nearby house to call the police, and this was around 10:50 p.m. when they called the police. So when the police arrived, they saw that the bodies had been placed leaning over the tub with their heads in the tub, which was overflowing with water. So, like, they were all positioned, like, over the tub. Their heads were in it. And I think they may have been tied up somehow, like, maybe just, like, hands behind the back. I've listened to podcasts on this, and I didn't necessarily write it down. But an autopsy of the bodies determined that Virginia had died by strangulation, and Bryce and Bobby had both been drowned, and all three had rope marks slash burns on their necks. So when the officials looked through the scene, things were pretty odd. There was baked chicken on the table, which had been half eaten. So I think that they were eating when somebody broke into their house. Mm-hmm. But it's also weird because you would think, I don't know, if somebody's breaking into their house, maybe you think it might be some sort of robbery. But there was a bag of money stuffed with hundreds of dollars untouched also on the table. Mm-hmm. And even though the home had been seemingly ransacked, nothing was taken. But the car that the family had driven home that night, so that four-wheel drive car they drove, was missing. And the neighbors reported that they saw that car actually leaving the house around 10:30 that night. So the highway patrol, though, ended up finding this car several hours later on the side of the road, but it was only about a mile away from the house. When they found it, the windshield wipers were still on, the doors were closed, but it was still running. So, like, that's weird. Like, what? Why? And there was also, now this is a weird thing, though, because I guess there was something that was stolen from the home that the police just didn't notice, because there was some silverware in a pillowcase that had been taken from the home in the car. But that's weird because they left a whole ass bag of money on the table. Mm-hmm. So it just don't make sense. So, in the weeks following the crimes, the police arrested four men. But all of these men were white, which was not what Virginia had described in her call, because she said they thought that they were black men. But all of these men that had been arrested were released because there was no evidence against them. But the police weren't really looking for men of a certain type at this point, because Troy did say that when Virginia called that night, he had music on, so he may not have heard exactly what she said clearly. I don't know if he, like, had some, you know, unconscious bias that made him think that there was black men breaking in, you know? I don't know what that was all about, but they weren't really putting much weight into that, so. However, as time went on, not really any leads came in, and the case was seeming to go cold. But some people were starting to be suspicious of Troy Hall himself. So Wade Carroll, who was the sheriff of Watauga County at the time, and one of the first officers to the scene, spoke with the Winston-Salem Journal in 1982. And this was about 10 years after the crime had taken place, so there wasn't really much movement in those 10 years. And this sheriff was not convinced that Troy Hall ever got a call from Virginia that night. He just could not believe that if people had come into the home and were beating her husband and son, that she would have been left in a position where she was able to just get on the phone and call for help. the sheriff didn't think that that was possible, which does make some sense. But other law enforcement officers, including the FBI agent, they believe that the call did happen. And I mean, I think it probably happened. And you'll see in the end that it probably did. But I mean, it does sound kind of suspicious, especially when it seems like there was a robbery, but like there wasn't. So it almost seems like, well, maybe it's somebody that they know who tried to make it look like a robbery.
Yes. That is what I'm thinking, is that it's someone that knows them that just wants to kill them because they have a vendetta against them. Not actually the money.
Yeah, because why would you leave a bag of money on the table? And it also seems like somebody who maybe, like, don't understand how to pretend like it's a robbery because they took a sack of silverware and but left it in the car. Like, it just is weird. So, at this point, the police were not able to find anything else relating to either Jenny or Troy being involved. And they both kind of just moved on with their lives separately. They ended up divorcing in 1976, which makes sense. I'm sure the stress of it all just kind of, you know, deteriorated their marriage. Troy actually became an attorney, and he moved to Georgia, and he owns, like, a construction company, too. And Jenny got remarried and moved to Washington State, but she still had ties to North Carolina because she still owned a home there. So they really just were seemingly putting this all behind them. And as of 2012, Jenny didn't really want to talk about the death of her family members, but she did still want to see, you know, somebody, you get justice served for them. So it seems like she doesn't speak out much, but she is probably trying to help, like, figure out what happened. Then in 2019, the first big breakthrough in the case came through. So a man named Shane Burt came to the White County Sheriff's Office, which is in Georgia, to help with research for a book about crimes in Georgia. So I guess he's doing a book and he's doing some research, so he was going there. So Shane Burt is the son of a man named Billy Sunday Burt. Billy was in prison in Watauga County, North Carolina, which is like the same county where this occurred. And Shane would often visit his father in prison. And on one of those visits, Shane said that his father told him that he had killed three people in the North Carolina mountains during a heavy snowstorm and told him that they almost got caught. So, when Shane told this to the White County Sheriff's Office, they immediately called Watauga County. The Watauga County Sheriff, when they got this tip, they realized that it was probably related to the Durham case. So, the sheriff at the time, Lynn Hageman, he immediately investigated these leads and conducted in-person interviews with Billy, who was, so he conducted in-person interviews with this Billy guy who had confessed this in September 2019, October 2020, and August of 2021. Okay. Pause. So initially when recording, I got a little confused with the names here. There were multiple Billies involved, and I, as I said at the beginning, I had written these notes a while ago, but I wanted to clear it up just in case there is confusion. And as you can see, as the recording progresses, I'm still confused on the Billies. So essentially there are two Billies that were involved in the incident. There is Billy Wayne Davis, who is the man that was interviewed, and there is Billy Sunday Burt. Billy Sunday Burt is the father of Shane Burt, the man who kind of brought all this into the light. And when the interviews were conducted, they were conducted of Billy Wayne Davis. I guess, you know, just through some investigation, they realized that Billy Wayne Davis was involved. And at the time, he was and is currently the only man that is still alive from the four men that have, you know, come out to be the ones who committed these crimes. So yeah, that was the Billy confusion. Sorry about that. But everything else is still the same. Just got a little confusion with the names. And if you're still confused, I get it. But I hope you can enjoy the rest of the episode. All right, back to your regularly scheduled programming. And through these interviews, he was able to determine the people that were responsible for these murders. So based on the investigation by the sheriff, they determined that Billy Wayne Davis, and three other men were hired for a hit in the North Carolina mountains. Mm-hmm. And they said that the hit happened during a bad snowstorm, and it resulted in them being almost caught. Now, Davis, which is Billy Wayne Davis, I'm trying to figure out, I got confused on these names, but there's like a Billy Wayne and a Billy Sunday, but Billy Wayne and Billy Sunday, Bert, they're all related. So Billy Wayne okay. Davis is one of the guys. He said that he was the getaway driver. And Bert, who I think is the dad of the guy who immediately brought this information, Bert, Gaddis, and Reed, who were three other guys, were the ones that actually killed the family. So all four of these guys were in it together. And the reason okay. that they were in it together, which makes more sense, is because these men were a part of a Georgia-based group / gang called the Dixie Mafia. Have you ever okay. heard of the Dixie Mafia?
Possibly.
I had actually never really heard of them, but, and I don't really know a lot about them, and one day I might do more about them, but it's like this gang that is active in the South that is not really talked about much, and there's actually a podcast out right now. It's like an investigative podcast, and it goes in depth about the Dixie Mafia, which is like basically a gang of just like Southern guys putting out hits, you know, like this. Like the mafia you would think of, like the Italian mafia, like in the Northeast. This is this. Okay. But,
so and instead of them eating like gabagool, they eat like fried chicken
steak,
Salisbury steak,
gizzards. Yes.
Nanner pudding.
Yes. So basically, these four men of the Dixie Mafia were responsible for these murders, and they know that now. But they still don't know who ordered the hit and why the hit was ordered. And that is the current state of the Durham case.
What?
Which, you're like, what? But when I first heard this story, there was no update. It was still completely unsolved.
So the people who, like, confessed to killing, they don't know who told them to do it?
They probably know, but I don't know if they're talking, you know? Because I think only one guy has said this is what happened. And also, this happened in, like, the 70s, so these other guys by this point could be dead, you know?
This is true.
So, I don't know if they're saying, and at this point, whoever ordered the hit and all that's probably dead too. So I don't know why they wouldn't say, but yeah, that's about where we're at.
Interesting.
When I first heard this story, it was fully unsolved. But now they're making a little headway. And with this new podcast about the Dixie Mafia, I'm curious if they might get some more answers. I don't know.
But they could. What podcast is it?
That's a good question. I honestly can probably Google it. I don't know. I haven't actually listened to it. I've been wanting to listen to it. It's like
there's a couple. Is it because there's the In the Red Clay, which is specifically it's specifically about this murder.
Oh, I have not listened to that. But the one that I was going to listen to was Gone South, which I think they do different like versions. Now, the In the Red Clay, I have not listened to that one. I should look that up about this murder. Honestly, I think I first read about this murder or heard about it, like, on True Crime Garage, like, a long time ago. And they recorded it, I'm sure, before 2019. And so when they reported on it, you know, there was no thing. But as I was reading through my notes, I got confused on the different Billies. So if y'all got confused, don't take my full word on it. Y'all go back and look. But basically, that's what it is. They think it's members of the Dixie Mafia that did it, but they still aren't sure, like, why or who ordered it. I just want to know why, personally.
I would also like to know why. Because you said that the father worked in car loans.
Yeah, the dad did car loans in Mount Airy. And then when he moved to Boone, it seemed like he just was like a car dealer. So, but who knows what he did, you know, before that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe he didn't approve someone for a loan. And they took it a bit too far.
I know. So, I don't know what could have happened. Like I said, I don't know too much about the Dixie Mafia. So, I don't know how they work, how they operate. But,
I don't know either. But I will. I will start listening to this podcast on my way to work in the morning. And I will update y'all with my findings.
Thank you. And if I messed up names in here, people, please don't kill me. I'm actually looking through now. I'm trying to figure out where the Billy stuff come from. But I guess there was two Billys in it. And so one Billy was talking. One Billy might have been dead. I couldn't say. There was two Billys. Billy must be a very common name.
It must be.
But yeah, either way.
Or at least it was.
It was. But yes.
His name is William.
Yes, probably.
That's an old name.
Yeah, so that's a very interesting case. Like I said, when I first heard it, I still thought it was unsolved. So when I started researching it, I was like, wait a minute now. They figured out some stuff, clearly. And I don't know if they charged anybody or anything. Like I said, those four guys, one of them is at least alive. But I would say that definitely not all of them are still alive because this happened quite some time ago. And they were, you know, adults, I would assume, when it all went down.
Yeah. And you know what? If they are part of the Dixie Mafia, they probably lived hard and a dangerous life.
Yeah, yeah. They probably didn't live peacefully into their 100s.
Mm-mm. But thank you for that story. I feel like I maybe have heard bits and pieces of that story. But I would like for it to be solved. Because cold cases, quite frankly, annoy me.
Yeah. And this was annoying because it's like halfway solved, but there's still stuff that needs to come out.
Mm. Yep.
But maybe soon.
Someone needs to get detective-ting. If you're a detective, work harder.
Also, since... Yeah. And I mean, they'll work hard, but we just need... I just want to know the why. And I don't know if any of y'all keep up with the Delphi murders, but recently, not too recently, but recently as in the past couple months, they have arrested somebody in connection with the Delphi murders, which has been like a very hot button issue in the true crime community. But he's innocent until proven guilty, but like, I'm very curious to see where this is going to go. His name, I can't remember what his name was, but anyways, if you keep up with it, True Crime Garage, I'll give them a shout out. They put out like an updated episode like right after this guy got arrested, they talk to like the police and stuff about all of it so they know what's going on. So listen to that if you are interested in it.
Sounds good. I'm going to have to give it a listen.
Yeah. Yes. Please do. And it's like not one of their best episodes. It's not one of their episodes that are like greatly produced, but it's literally like... one of them's in a hotel room one place and one of them's in a hotel room somewhere else and they're like, we have to talk about it right now. So, but it was good.
This is breaking news.
So I've been keeping up with it. It really was. They were like, because I think they recorded it like the day the guy got arrested.
I can appreciate that. I like to get it on the ground floor.
Yeah.
Give it.
I do too.
Also, while we're talking about it, evidently, Casey Anthony has a podcast, not a podcast, a documentary.
I've seen.
And
I haven't seen the documentary, but I've seen the information.
I've seen it out. I have not watched it. And here's the thing. She's fucking guilty. I'm sorry. She's guilty. I think she's guilty. I don't really care to hear what she has to say. Because she killed her child. And got away with it.
Yeah.
So I don't really want to hear it. But if anyone watches it and, you know, you hear, you know, something else about it, you know, or you want to share something, let me know. Because I'm going to be honest, if I see her in the streets, I'm a slugger.
I honestly might watch it. I just want to see, I don't know, because I remember I watched the trial, like all of it, because I was at the beach with my mama and papa, not the mama who is like my real Appalachia mama, like they're both from Appalachia, but I was with my younger grandparents at the beach, and I remember we stayed at the beach extra days because my papa wanted to watch the trial. We were watching it, and he was like, she's guilty! And I was like, I don't know how old we were, like, I don't even know if I was in middle school, but I remember watching it, and when she was found not guilty, it was just like, oh my god, how? And so, I kind of would like to watch something about it now as an adult, and see, like, how I feel. I mean, obviously, I think she's guilty. I think everybody thinks she's guilty. It's kind of like OJ, like, duh. But I want to know, I wish I could watch the trial as an adult to see, like, what did the jury find, like, and there may even, like, what did the jury find as reasonable doubt as to not charge, like, convict her? I don't know.
I feel like,
I know she had a good lawyer.
I know she's guilty, but I don't know actually too much about the case because it came out when I was, like, just young enough to maybe, maybe not to actually watch it, but I remember my parents being pissed when the conviction came out.
Yeah, I remember watching the whole thing, but that don't mean I know what was going on. I mean, I feel like I had to be, though, probably like 11? What year was it? Now I need to know, because I just don't even know. I hope people like episodes where we talk a lot. They haven't seen us in a while. Casey Anthony trial, because I remember watching it. The only thing I really remember is that trial made me realize what chloroform was.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely.
Because I know that came up a lot, and I was like, what is that? Let's see, when was the trial, though? I see the dates. Well, let's see. Casey Anthony trial. Okay, the trial was in 2011, it says.
Yeah, so it's been about a good 10 years.
So, well, damn, was that older than I thought I was?
I mean, but it also aired when I was
13.
Yeah, like,
was I that old?
No, you were not that old. I don't think that's how math works.
I did the math. I feel like I was younger than that, though.
Maybe. I couldn't say.
Either way, we were on that cusp.
Either way, I was at school when the majority of it aired. And, you know, my mama wasn't going to let me skip school to watch this trial.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't high school. I don't know what happened. I just remember my grandpa was pissed.
Yep. But if anyone watches it, please give me your insight on it. That's all I got to say about that. But yeah. I could go on, but to save us some time, Taylor, what is our theme for next week?
Our theme for next week is a classic, just a good old classic, 1980s, murders, crimes. It doesn't quite have to be a murder if you don't want it to be, but 1980s crimes.
Yeah, could be something simple like tax evasion.
Yes, I'm going to do mine on tax evasion because I understand taxes.
That is a lie.
Yes, that is a definite lie.
But thank you for listening. Follow us on everything. TikTok, mm-hmm. Instagram, Facebook. Email us if you watch the Casey Anthony documentary. Mm-hmm. Buy a crocheted animal from Taylor. That's how she copes with her stress.
Yeah. I will not be selling any more crochet animals till the beginning of the year, though. So, once the beginning of the year hits, maybe hit me up. But right now, I'm crocheted animaled out. Yeah. Also, I have to make blankets for a few family members before the holidays, like Christmas actually comes. So, I'm booked out.
Wow. Wow. Well, so go ahead and get that pre-order in for the new year, everybody.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm.
Well, thank you for listening. In the meantime, stay weird. Goodbye.
Goodbye.